All right, you're back in the DFSR here with an NFL podcast. It's Friday, September 7th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Football is already underway. We had a game under our belts, and we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. DFSR.com/NFL. As always, get you that free right now 7-day trial for our users. We'll cover you on our projection system for our projection system and optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, MLB. Premium content as well, members only chat room. It's all covered under one subscription package, so you're all good to go. You can try it now free for 7 days, and then just $29.95 a month after, but it'll cover you all the way through week one, and you have access to everything that we're putting out up until Sunday and afterwards. So go and check that out, dfsr.com/NFL. We'll get you started. Buddy, one game in the books. Falcons completely blew it last night, can't convert in the red zone. What else is new? It's like, they just rolled back the Super Bowl game. The Eagles looked awful. I don't really know. It's like if you learn nothing from the season before, should you keep? I'm being kind of serious.
I learned next to nothing from the season before, so I'm a good person to ask here. So go ahead.
Right. So if you learned next to nothing or / nothing from the season before, in this exact same situation, like this was your last game you played, you lost. If for all the reasons you lost,
you had all year to think about it. Biggest game of most of your players' careers. Yeah.
That team brings back the exact same team for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. And so do you.
You do all the same exact things. Get yourself down close to scoring, and just do every single wrong thing to not score. I mean, it's unbelievable to watch. Do you think you were in a situation? I mean, I'm your boss, so let's figure this out. Do you think
you're whose boss?
Yours. You're talking to yourself. Do you think like, if you did,
you're kind of like your own boss, but keep going.
If you did this in front of me, do you think you would keep your job?
Well, given that I'm listed as the CEO on all of our professional arrangements, like with AP Images and all these other big companies, I'm pretty sure. It would be like, you know, George Costanza walking to the office and trying to tell his boss that the boss is fired. So, yes, I do believe I would keep my job if you told me I was fired. But
so,
you know, I can't say for sure at this point.
Football, this is what can be so frustrating about football because, and we're going to talk about this all season long, but the in terms of fantasy, so much hinges on the touchdown, right? That when you, if you roster guys like Julio Jones and Devontae Freeman, really anybody, Matt Ryan, to have them get so close and not score is like the biggest like negative like leverage thing that can happen to you in fantasy. It's so brutal. And then you have people taking victory laps on Jay Ajayi, who looked awful for most of the game and then just happens to score two touchdowns because the Eagles, you know, I want to say luck box their way into some good field position, but they kind of just get close and then he rumbles two in. Like, this is what can make football very, very frustrating. Is it a thing that you are going to end up contending with all year again on this, like some of this just being at the hands of the almighty touchdown? Is it something to just get used to? Is it something that we can like work on predicting better? Because like if you just look at this game and you look at touchdowns and knowing touchdowns are just the crucial piece of fantasy, is there anything to take away, or is this kind of just where we are in football in 2018?
No, I think there's something to take away. Yes, it's going to be where we are in football forever. That will never change. For fantasy, I wouldn't imagine that people would make touchdowns less important. I think when it comes to DFS, actually there's a big section on this in our NFL ebook that we just re-released, so you can check that out for free at dfsr.com/ebook. But basically the idea is that there are factors that can help us predict touchdowns. Now yesterday for the Falcons, you know, nothing could have predicted just getting no points out of all those excellent drives, you know, being inside the 20 so many times and just coming out with nothing. But for a normal week, that should have been highly correlated with scoring. And so, you know, there's no way to predict that your team's going to get stuffed inside the 5-yard line. I guess if you have terrible play calling the way the Falcons do, right, then maybe you can predict it on some level. But yeah, that ultimately getting more opportunities inside the red zone is going to lead to more scores. Even teams that are poor inside the red zone are going to score far more once they're in there than when they're outside the red zone. And so really what we're going to be keeping an eye on is what teams are putting themselves in the position to score. Because it's certainly, while it feels worse to watch your team get down inside the 5 and not score, if your team never gets down inside the 5 and doesn't score, you probably made a worse decision than if they just unluckily get stuffed down there. So yeah, that's kind of my general take right now. Anyone who ran into that situation can't really beat themselves up if you played the Falcons last night. I mean, maybe it was just a bad play in general, but it's not your fault when your guys don't punch it in from the last 5 yards.
And that's a really important thing to remember on a week-to-week basis, especially if you get, quote, burned by a player in a certain week, is to... Right. And this is where I do think sometimes looking at stats or just actually... In some ways, watching football games, I sometimes caution people about watching games and try to take any real have any real takeaways. Like baseball, you really can't. There's some takeaways you can have just based on some like luck stuff, and like that's it. You really shouldn't like eye test whether a guy looks healthy or whatever BS like some people think they can do. Football.
I know you're not talking to me. You're talking to the other people because I'm actually.
I know you're not. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to everybody else. The no, but in football, what can help you is to understand that if the opportunity was there, and stats, you know, red zone stats can tell you this to some degree, and to understand it, you know, what opportunity was there. And whether that opportunity is likely to continue, whether or not the result was the thing you wanted, you know? So, like, when the Falcons, this will be the last thing I'm saying, because I know we're going to move into game by game, but, you know, if you watch the game and you see that Julio Jones just off the field for, like, three bunch red zone packages, then you I probably start getting a little concerned that he's not going to see the kind of red zone usage you thought he was going to, that they promised to happen, because he's simply not on the field, right?
And there I'm going to call out Jones specifically here, because I actually think he is someone that you can take something away from, because, you know, it's one thing, like, year in, year out, we try to look at red zone usage and try to draw conclusions from it. And it's one thing if Jones got the ball thrown to him three times and dropped it. That at least shows you that the plan was to attempt to give him the ball and it didn't work out. So I think you probably take that away from their running backs, for instance. If you're looking at Jones right now or any of the receivers over there, Sanu, you have to be pretty concerned because, I mean, maybe they learned their lesson and come from it, but as of right now, you have no data to suggest that they have learned their lesson.
They haven't. They didn't learn. They expressly didn't learn their lesson because they didn't learn this lesson from the season. Now, maybe the media outcry is so much to say that, like, even the most lay fan understands it, but whatever. So anyway, this is where watching the game, I think, is somewhat helpful in saying, was the opportunity there? You know, was this play close? Was he an inch away from doing something? But not to say, oh, he's, like, running hard or he's hitting the holes hard. Unless you are a hardcore football expert, and I doubt that anyone listening to this podcast is on that level because they'd probably just be publishing something on their own. I would say, short of that, I think you can take things away from
the games. Chris Collinsworth being like, dude, what the hell? Just give me the information about
He was another one. I was able to understand that his announcing last night was garbage. All right, let's move on. We're already running, not behind, but we've got a lot to get to here. Okay, we're going to roll through game by game. We'll talk about some of the injury concerns that we can take a look at. Some of the, we did talk about cash game plays yesterday. We will gloss over some of those guys. Those were Brady, Roethlisberger, Mariota, although we had a long discussion about that. At running back, it was Kamara, DJ, Christian McCaffrey, James Conner, and then at wide receiver, it was Keenan Allen, some of the 49ers guys and the Jacksonville guys, Doyle and Walker at tight end. So if we move past those guys in the game by game, it's only because we spent an in-depth look at...
We'll still nod to them.
Yeah, and yesterday's podcast. All right. I'll hit up some of the injuries. We'll go through game by game. We'll take a high-level view of what some of these games look like and try to pick off some offbeat plays as well, because with such a long runway on week one, we're not at a point where information is sneaking up on anybody. Sometimes that can happen on a short week with injuries and, you know, trying to figure out who's going to have opportunity. That is not the case with week one. Everything is basically laid out on the table as much, and most players are DFS players are walking in with around the same amount of knowledge at this point, I would say. You know, there's degrees to which you can be a little bit better, a little bit worse, but week one gives everyone the longest runway. The first game is Jacksonville goes in and takes on New York. The only real key injury notes that I can really focus here on, Jalen Ramsey is questionable, and I only bring him up because that would probably give a boost if he were to not play. I think he's going to play, but if he were to not play, it would definitely give a boost to some of the receivers, specifically Beckham.
Wouldn't Bowie be covering Beckham for...
I'll look at the wide receiver chart. Let's just give a boost to the passing game in general, and then
I think it's the Giants' still passing game is still going to be totally unplayable here. So that's worth noting, but it's not going to. You're still not going to play any Giants receivers or passers right here.
I think there's a case to play them in GBPs, and I was on the Fantasy Pros podcast yesterday, and I as a guest, and I did mention something. It's so funny. So one of the oldest, most sort of like honest, less dishonest answers you can give in DFS just analysis is call someone a GBP play, because sometimes that does make sense because they have a high upside play, and sometimes that's the equivalent of like, I don't know. So, but it's easy for me to say GBP play. Like, and I think it's important.
It's a way to dodge it. Like, you know, baseball actually, in baseball, unfortunately, it's almost always true. Like, because somebody's going to score the runs. It's tough to say who it is. I mean, you can say, it's on one hand, everyone knows that you shouldn't play batters who bat eighth, but that also means nobody's going to play them. So, you know, in baseball, it's actually true. In football, I don't think it's true. And I'm going to make a case real quick. I mean, maybe you want to make a case for these guys as GPP plays. I'm going to make a case against it, because I feel like say Ramsey is out and Bowie's playing, my personal take would be that whatever's working for the Giants, like say Beckham goes out there, you know, they buy line Bowie up on the other side, and Beckham gets a touchdown on the first drive. Like, what are the odds that they just switch Bowie onto that and just shut down whoever is having their good game? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's the exact situation where Jacksonville has the ability to take away a receiver or a situation, and I wouldn't want to be the one trying to speculate, like, oh yeah, no, they're just going to have Bowie shadow Beckham and Ramsey's going to be questionable. I don't know. It just seems like a lot would need to go right for that to work out for you.
Just so you, just as a note, I mean, I'm looking at some Pro Football Focus predictions on coverage, and they do have Ramsey shadow covering Beckham. So that is the that
right. But
like,
if he's out, wouldn't Bowie just do that?
Oh, like, gotcha. Oh, I was misunderstanding what you're saying. I had the timing on those things wrong. I thought you were saying if Ramsey still played. Okay, never mind. Okay, let's. So you're saying we're talking about a Jacksonville defense that was ranked, I believe, number one against the pass last season, somewhere right around there. Yes, they were number one against the pass. They were very bad against the run. Let's talk about the two running backs in this game, though. So we have Fournette on one side. I love Fournette this week. Like, I think I mentioned this in the Cash Game podcast. You know, I love him as a nine. I put him in as a 9-1 bet to win the rushing title this season. He goes against a Giants defense that was pretty damn bad last season. Did not make any huge improvements. They were 26 against the rush. How close do you think Fournette is to actually a cash game play? I think we probably could both agree that he might even make – he's an excellent upside GPP play, especially if you think Kamara is going to be like the highest owned running back in around the same range. What are your thoughts on Fournette? And then I'm going to flip it around too about Barkley going the other way.
Well, yeah, so I think we'll get to Barkley in a second. I'm higher on Fournette than I am on Barkley. I think Fournette – the biggest thing about him that a lot of people are going to underrate is that he's still one of the very few – super, super reliable opportunity plays in the entire NFL. So last season, he comes in at 268 total carries. That was good for seventh in the league. And people are going to forget, inevitably, because people always just forget everything, that he also missed time last season. So the fact that he ranks fifth overall in terms of carries, I mean, that also might have contributed to him missing time. But the fact that he was still able to get up there and be in the top five in carries, top seven in carries, be one of the top 10 rushers in the league. He really got held back only by the yards per attempt. And I think this season, like, the yards per attempt doesn't necessarily need to track from year to year, especially given the fact that he played hurt a little bit. Mm-hmm. That could have held him back. Going in against the Giants here, definitely a great cash game consideration. I think he's one of the guys you can actually count on, unlike most of the guys just in general, that can go in there and get 20 touches in the game. So, yep, he can be on the cash game list. And if things really get cooking, he can definitely put some touchdowns in play as well. So, given the uncertain receiving situation in Jacksonville, I know we like those guys, but I mean, just as it gets down and close, it's hard to believe that they won't hand Fournette the ball as well. He seems like a high floor, high ceiling player.
Yeah, I think that this is the plan. I think they made it pretty clear. The plan is to just turn him into just like a Ezekiel Elliott kind of volume guy and play him on his rookie contract through that way, and then get someone else in the draft later. I think that's basically the plan with most teams with running backs at this point. I don't think anyone has long-term aspirations when it comes to their running backs. It's a shame that this the way that it is, and yeah, I think that's just what we're looking at with Fournette. I agree with you that the ankle injury really hampered him in the second half of the season, and he was still decent. So this guy's just a high pedigree, great running back. There was no doubt about it coming out of college, and they looked like they were going to run him forever. He is an on-the-road favorite, but only slight, like -2 right now. That does fall into a question – no, excuse me, -3. That does fall into a question mark zone if you're using Vegas odds to kind of just look at where running backs end up. Not all -3s are made the same, unfortunately, with the way Vegas puts this out. What about Barkley? And by the way, we did talk about the Jacksonville receivers. But one other guy to mention here, Safarian Jenkins is questionable, might not play. There could be opportunity I just forgot the backup's name real quick. It's not Vinette. I'll look it up real quick. I'm blanking on who his backup is. Oh, Niles Paul, sorry. There could be opportunity in the end zone for Niles Paul or Safarian Jenkins, if depending on who plays, because Jacksonville does throw to the tight end down and close. They did that with Mercedes Lewis last year. What are your thoughts on Barkley? Obviously highly touted, went very high in drafts for a rookie running back for all intents and purposes. He looks like the three down back for the Giants. Is the amount that he stands to possibly just be on the field enough to consider, I don't know, a high-end GPP play against a team that really did struggle against the rush last year? Jacksonville was like something like 27th in DVOA against the rush in 2017.
I'm not going to play Barkley. I don't see any reason to stick my neck out on a guy who has no track record whatsoever in the NFL, who's on a team that has difficulty running the ball. You can be as talented as you want in terms of being a running back, And well, that's not true. There are probably certain running backs, Adrian Peterson in his prime, that can sort of transcend the actual team that they're on. We have no evidence to suggest that Barkley is one of those guys just yet. So like, yeah, he's a good player. I am bullish on his future. There's no reason to think he'll be any worse than any of the other like good running backs that come out of college or whatever else. But it's not like he's inheriting, you know, it's not like he's inheriting Ezekiel Elliott's situation where like we know that this team can run the hell out of the ball and he's just the, you know, the heir to the throne. Like that's just not what we're seeing here. So I don't know. I'm not, definitely think he's too expensive for cash. I think it'd be crazy to play him in cash personally. And I think for big tournaments, you're just going to be in the same boat. Everyone's dreaming on this guy's upside right now. He's the sexy new thing. He's, no one is sleeping on the guy. I don't think you get separation on him. And I don't think, yeah, he could be the best play. There's certainly in play, but there's just no evidence-based case that he's the best play.
I'm gonna put it this way, in terms of like the shoulder shrug GBP play. I'll have 100 or so lineups in between DraftKings and FanDuel this week, and that will not be a guy that I have in lineups. That's fine. At some point, you just have to call it on what kind of exposure you want to
this
a guy.
This guy's just not gonna be one of my guys. I think that's totally reasonable.
That's just not gonna be there. There's gonna be a long list of guys that will be there. You know, even like light exposures. Barkley, there's not gonna be a stacking. Fournette will be a guy that will be in there. Barkley will not. By the way. I would actually, if I'm going to play Fournette, I would actually correlate some of the Giants receivers. Like, I'd rather do them in GBPs just because I would want to kind of go back the other way on Fournette. But Barkley's just not a guy I don't think I'm going
to
go there
with. And he could be great, by the way. None of us to say that it's not impossible for him to have a good game. It's just a why bother for me.
So. For sure. Next game on the list, we have the Bills go in and face the Ravens. This game started at Ravens -4. Then the Bills said that they're going to start Nathan Peterman at quarterback, and that line showed up to -7.5, like in about 30 seconds when that announcement was made. So if you want to like just be, I'm pretty sure that was a timeline on when it jumped because it. Yeah, I'm having trouble tracking where it jumped exactly, but I think it was right around that time they make that announcement. If you're a coach and it started as this line, and then you make an announcement at your quarterback, and you have the choice of all the quarterbacks you can make, and the line jumps like 3.5 points, is that like grounds to just be instantly fired? Like I don't know what needs to happen. Do you just relegate the team at that point? Like I don't know what needs to happen because people just like I could just imagine like people in sports books even like just like sprinting down the hallway trying to get to the ticket counter before before the line jumps. The Ravens here, this does project to be a very slow game. The over under is only 40.5 with the Bills coming in at 16.5 implied points. So I'm just gonna forget the Bills here. I don't think there's any reason to take any shot on any single one of these guys. The situation's terrible. There's nothing to look forward to here. Even like LeSean McCoy doesn't even seem like he's mentally probably gonna be checked out. He's had some legal troubles too. So I'm just gonna wipe them off the board. But the Ravens, guys that we can play here. So we have Alex Collins. I want to get your thoughts on Alex Collins, and then they have a new receiving core with Crabtree, Ross, and Willie Snead. And then their defense, too, which is very expensive. So I guess if you want to go through, I have some thoughts, but I don't know if you want to go through or any one of those guys stands out to you as possible cash game or GPP upside play.
Yeah, so I think on the Ravens side, in terms of passing the ball, I think there is some pretty interesting upside here. I think, well, I don't know. I mean, John Brown and Willie Snead are guys that have put up big games in the past and wouldn't blame anyone for dreaming on them. But the guy I'm actually like kind of sneakily interested here in is Michael Crabtree. Just because, generally speaking, we don't like receivers on new teams. But when the whole receiving core is new receivers, like somebody has to get the ball. And it seems far more likely to me that Flacco will be able to hook up with a guy, you know, just that stays closer to the line of scrimmage than guys who are just sprinting full speed down the field. Now, Flacco has put up some big numbers with guys that fit that profile in the past, you know, like Steve Smith or Torrey Smith or, you know, any of those guys. But I just have to think that Crabtree represents the safer option here. I think he's still cheaper. I think, you know, if there's a guy who's going to get double-digit targets on Baltimore for this game that you had to bet on, it has to be Crabtree in my mind. And, you know, with targets comes potential touchdowns and everything else. Now, unfortunately for us, the Ravens tend to be fairly conservative once they get down in the red zone. So, you know, that's really where Crabtree could pay off for you. Like one of those games where he gets 11 targets, you know, 7 catches for 75 yards, but 2 of them are touchdowns. So I'm not sure about it, but I think my gut tells me that Crabtree's worth taking a stab on.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull the number up, because I wrote about it in the offseason, and I'm having trouble finding it now, because I'm almost positive that when looking at his target distribution in previous seasons, he did not throw to the slot all that often, which is where Crabtree lined up. Now, they could run different sets, and I'm not sure. It's a new team. I'm not sure exactly what their plan is. We'll know sort of after week one. That would be my only – it's not really a concern, and I'm with you. We have Crabtree for easily the most targets on this team. I think somewhere around 8.5 or 9, which is a lot for a Ravens receiver. That even might just be too high, just in terms of like overall pace of play. Because again, they've made they've signaled that they want to run the ball. I love Alex Collins here. He is not a cash game play for me because the pace of the game is probably too slow for him, and there's just a few too many questions behind him between Dixon.
And you only need so many running backs, right? So like to cross the threshold. That's the other thing about the cash versus GPP discussion is that you only need 2 or 3 of each of these guys, and so he just doesn't have to be. You can still be a great play without being one of the 3 best plays.
Exactly, and I think that so when you know we looked at Vegas lines, there's only 2 running backs here that have -7 or more home favorites, and that's Kamara and Alex Collins. That's the whole list of you know running backs that we can feel if we're looking at if Vegas is a prediction of at least game script, which is to say they're going to be up and they're going to try to win and just grind the clock out on a team that we already know does it. It stands to reason to me that Collins could push toward 15 to 20 carries in this game. I think they want him to be the guy. They did kind of limit him in preseason, and the speculation was because they were just kind of saving him and because he already knew the scheme, like as opposed to, like say, Christian McCaffrey, who they were trying to bring into the fold as more of an every-down back. The Collins thing strikes me as the opportunity is going to be there for him, and if you, like I said, if you want to take a look at Vegas and where this number... Again, this chicken or egg, but that number spikes when you're a -7 or more favorite at home. Like, you go through the roof in terms of your opportunity. So I think Collins in the middle tier is definitely a GPP play for me. The only thing that, like I said, holds me back for cash is that is I just think that there's just enough of a question mark behind him about opportunity with Allen and Dixon, and I just think the game is just going to be too low scoring. It's going to be too slow to get him enough overall touches to warrant it. Any other thoughts on this game, or can we move on?
No, I think we can move on here.
All right, the next game on the list is the Bucs go in and play the Saints. The aforementioned Alvin Kamara going here. This game is up to 9.5 favorites in terms of the Saints, with the New Orleans having one of the highest, if not the highest, implied total at 29.5 right now. The Bucs come in without Jameis Winston. He had a little Uber situation that's going to get him, got him suspended for the first 3 games. They're going to come in with Ryan Fitzpatrick. They are heavy underdogs. Peyton Barber is someone that people have thrown out as possible GPP play. That is not going to be a guy that I want to target personally. He looks like he's going to be the starter, for all, you know, for everything you can believe about what Coach Speak says. And even in situations like this, like, can you imagine a game where Peyton Barber is great, like being such heavy underdogs to a team that we already know has a pretty great offense in a game that it would shock me if the Bucs weren't playing catch up this entire game.
Well, yeah, he's obviously nothing close to a cash game play. In terms of, is he on the list of guys who could put up a big game? Yes. Like, it's not implausible. It's unlikely. If you only have 10 GPP lineups, he probably isn't going to be in any of them. But in a game that could wind up being fast-paced, the case for running backs in a situation like this is if the Bucs happen to get a lead, you can bet that they're going to want to keep the Saints off the field, and in which case, you know, the Saints don't have the greatest rush defense. Barber could go out there and potentially do something, but you know, we're in the reach GPP play territory for sure.
And then we have, you know, the return. They return most of the receiving core with Evans, but are you still getting Ryan Fitzpatrick here? I guess there's a case to be made that they're going to be playing catch up in this game. And I mean, Evans had all kinds of conversion issues last year. No matter who the quarterback was, he just didn't. He really just didn't come close to fulfilling the promise of what people thought he was going to do last season. He was probably goes down as one of the major disappointments, especially in the wide receiver core from last season. We did talk at length about Kamara. Kamara's a guy I'll have in every cash game lineup. I think he'll be one of the highest owned plays of the entire week. I don't think that's really in question at this point. The question now is how much exposure you want to have to him in GPP. They do have Gillislee there. You know, I like the idea of possibly get one. I think there's a case to even game stack this, like for cash. Like, they just go Breeze, Kamara, Michael Thomas, and say that gives me a really, really high floor for overall points scored. Because we don't have that as a lineup in our system right now, but I don't know. Breeze was, if you look at standard deviation, Breeze was the most consistent fantasy quarterback last year, and it's like not even close. He just did the same thing every damn game.
Isn't that so crazy too? Because don't you remember there was like so much narrative last year around Breeze being like done and how he kind of stinks now? And
well, they just, like, you know, the thing was they just didn't need him to do a lot because they ran the ball so well that he ran the ball so well that he just really kind of wasn't asked to provide all that much, you know, all that much scoring. And that's really kind of the long and short.
And big plays took him off the field a lot too.
Like, but it's worth noting here that he was
and have 100 yards or whatever. Like, it was pretty tough.
He finished the season in the top. I'm looking at this list. He finished the season in the top 15 of overall fantasy point scoring. So it wasn't like he didn't do anything. And his standard deviation of FanDuel scoring was 3.5. By comparison, the next closest guy that I can see here was Wentz at 5.3. So like, you're not even, and then the number really skyrockets up to like the sevens for guys like Brady. So he was twice as, if you want to take standard deviation and coefficient of variation, he was right around twice as consistent as a guy like Brady. Do you think there's merit to just stacking those three guys in cash? Because I kind of love Thomas here in this situation as well.
Oh, cash. Yes, you're going to play Kamara in cash anyway. So the real question is, can you play Breeze and Thomas alongside them? And again, it's not implausible. I think Thomas is mostly pretty underrated because he didn't have a lot of those big explosive games. And it's actually funny. I feel like wide receivers wind up getting underrated when they don't really go off in any given week. And it's just a strictly emotional thing because like, it actually doesn't do you any favors in cash when your wide receiver goes completely bananas. Like, if he's going to just make you lose automatically the next week, a guy like Thomas, mm-hmm. who can consistently put up those 80 yards a game and get in the end zone occasionally, will be pretty good on you. Thomas also last season ran, I think, pretty darn bad in terms of touchdowns. To be targeted, yes, 149 times and score just 5 touchdowns, especially being the most targeted receiver for them in the red zone. I mean, after Kamara. I think there's plenty of room to grow on Thomas. I like Thomas. I just don't know if you're going to be spending up, if you can afford to spend up a quarterback and wide receiver and running back without giving up too much elsewhere.
I think you can. I think just the nature of, like, especially if guys like James Conner come out, some of these cheaper wide receivers, you probably can't do it like with Keenan Allen that we talked about. But the case here, right, for Thomas, last season he was, he was fourth overall in total receptions, or excuse me, third overall in total receptions on the season. He was fifth in targets, again, ahead of guys like Julio Jones and A.J. Green. I think A.J. Green missed the game, but he was ahead of those guys in targets. Among the top targeted guys, he had easily the best conversion rate. At 70%. So if you think that, like, even removing Ingram's touches doesn't go one-to-one to a guy like Kamara, and they just do end up passing a little bit more because last season they didn't have to, they just ran, they could run the ball so much, you know, let's say, and Ingram got a lot of touches. If you take all Ingram's touches, you do not give them all to Kamara, I don't think you can give too many to Gillislee. Is it reasonable to expect they just open the season just throwing a little bit more? They have the weapon. I don't know. I'm kind of talking myself into Thomas as possibly a borderline cash gameplay. Is he so far behind Keenan Allen at this point? Because we did talk about Allen. Am I crazy to even think that? Or are we onto something here?
Well, so it's not just that he's behind Keenan Allen. He's also $500 more expensive than Keenan Allen. So do I want to pay a premium for a guy who, you know, based on the things that I look at, is just worse in every way? The answer is no. Like, Allen, 10 more targets last season, 150 more yards, more touchdowns, just like better in every way. And I don't mind Thomas. I think he's a fine player, but why? I would need a really good answer to the question, why am I paying a premium for a guy who was worse in every way last season? And I don't think missing one of your two running backs is enough of an answer for that question.
Let me give you a quick lineup here real quick. I'm going off the rails here, but I just want to point out this something, because looking at our projection system, if I lock in Thomas on FanDuel, I'm going to leave the quarterback off here. I get Kamara, DJ, Thomas, Allen, Keelan Cole because he's free, Jack Doyle, who we talked about in cash, and James Conner in a defense. You feel comfortable at that point? And by the way, the quarterback that's in here is 8,100. This is where we are with pricing. This is kind of what I was saying before yesterday about like how soft the pricing is. Like, it is insane that you can realistically get all those guys that I just mentioned into a lineup. And at that point, you're just taking like the least volatile position, which is quarterback, and just saying, I will pay down a little bit to get a guy like Roethlisberger or Cousins, because all these guys are in the lineup. I don't know. We're going to talk off air about this because I think I'm maybe just going a little overboard, but I'm starting to love Thomas. All right, let's move on from this game. Oh, by the way, I think you can take a look at some of the other receiving core for GBPs if you're going to stack Breeze. The case, by the way, for GBPs to go a little bit more in on Thomas and Breeze is that Kamara will be much higher owned than both of those guys. So if you want to somehow grab some of the touchdown equity from this game in the hope that Kamara doesn't get it for tournaments, I think that is a pretty easy pivot. All right, let's move into Tennessee and the Dolphins. This is a game that started at Tennessee -2.5, is now down to -1 with them on the road, going with the points just coming off of there, coming a little off both, but more down from the Titans. We talked briefly about Mariota yesterday. They do get a offense coordinator change in Matt LaFleur. That looks like he could increase the pace here. They also brought in Deion Lewis in the offseason to kind of maybe take over some of the DeMarco Murray role with Derrick Henry still there. The wide receiver core remains basically the same. And the Dolphins come in with Tannehill under center and with Jarvis Landry having gone now to the Browns and Devontae Parker going to sit out. I think he'll be replaced by Albert Wilson. So a lot to think about here. Let's start with the Titans. We talked about Mariota yesterday. What are your thoughts on the running back situation? Last year we were stuck in an RBBC with Murray and Henry, and it sure looks like it's going to be the case again this year.
Yeah, I mean, the Titans, I guess, first of all, I'm definitely not going to touch any random running backs by committee this season. I don't mind Mariota for cash games or for big tournaments. We talked about him yesterday. I think ultimately it's just going to depend on where you want to apportion your money, but he's playable. Probably a little bit too risky for my personal taste for cash games. Yeah, on the Tennessee side of the ball, like with all of the interesting, intriguing big upside plays I can pull from across the NFL, I just don't know why I'm going to be dabbling in Tennessee unless I'm just going really deep and trying to make lineups that no one else is going to make, On the Miami side, I think things get a little bit more interesting. I mean, they're one of these teams that's opened up a ton of targets this season.
Yes.
And those have to go somewhere. And so in the passing game, and I think the other piece as well, I mean, people are high on Kenyon Drake going into the season. I think that's pretty reasonable. Last season, we saw Drake's touches kind of trail off after those first two big games. And Tennessee was a top four rushing defense last season in terms of yards allowed. So I think the Miami passing game actually gives us a lot of opportunity for some pretty interesting upside. So I'm curious to know, like, what are you seeing there? Who are the guys we can really look at as potential upside guys here?
Okay, one thing about Drake is in the games that he the usage, so it's funny about this chicken or egg thing, because the usage, because he's another guy I wrote up as a GPP play that I want to have exposure to. In the games where he lost carries, the usage was still there. He had 27 touches in one of them and then 16 and 17. Now the 16 and 17 aren't huge numbers, but they came in the passing game. So he was, one thing I like in running backs, especially from a GPP standpoint, is if they are part of all parts of the plan, which is to say winning or losing, then right. Like if you're a three, if you're essentially just calling this a three down back, because you are, and some guys get sniped by this because, a good example, we saw this with Kareem Hunt last year. We saw that Kareem Hunt was part of the plan when they were winning and the first two downs, but it was when it was time for hurry up, that guy was off the field. Like he did not play at all. And so that is a concern for ultimate upside. There's only one game script in that case that works for you with a guy like that, and that's to say they're winning, right? And so Drake, to me, does not fit that mold. I think that their plan is to have him down there as a three down back. He's a good pass catcher. I love his upside. He's not a cash play for me because they're just not favorites, and it's still the Dolphins and all those other question marks. And I love his upside here because I think there are a lot of scenarios where he can get back to some of this usage against. And again, this game projects to be, they do project to be some points considering that these offenses are not great. I mean, this is a 45 over under for the Titans and the Dolphins. That is to say, Vegas is expecting some points from teams that aren't all that good. You mentioned the receiver core. Again, they lose Jarvis Landry, number one most targeted receiver in football last year. They are without Devontae Parker this year. They're now left with Kenny Stills and Amendola. Amendola looks like he's going to fit, in the scheme at least, the Jarvis Landry role in that slot. That role got a ton of targets last year. Now, Landry's great, so it's not, you can't just give him, 11 targets a game or whatever Landry was seeing, but is it reasonable to expect we get, I don't know, 8 targets out of Amendola? 9? I mean, this is only because this scheme and now how down they are with guys, they throw to the slot receiver a lot in this offense.
Yeah, actually. And, Amendola dealt with his own injury things last year, but he actually looked pretty good in the preseason to me. He was cutting well. He was getting in there and operating in that exact same Jarvis Landry type of role. He's super, super cheap. Like, and if he goes in and gets 12 targets, like you can expect the price to come right up to $6,600. So I'm not sure if I just want to, again, I don't know if I need to be in the speculation business for my cash games this year. But for big tournaments, this is like a guy that's absolutely at the top of my list. While everyone else is going cheap in a very obvious like James Conner sorts of ways, like it's not outside the realm of possibility that Amendola, especially on DraftKings, just outscores the guy outright. So I think, yeah, terrific, terrific target there.
Yeah, very cheap. And again, like he's not Landry, so Landry's just a great receiver and it had, long time in this offense.
Amendola's had some pretty good moments himself. I mean, Landry's good, but Landry also a pretty big function of the role he's been given in the past.
And Landry had those targets when Tannehill was around too. It's worth mentioning. So like with Tannehill back, this is not like we're saying like the, you know, last year they had the Jay Cutler, who's the other quarterback? Ryan Moore. I can forget who their other quarterback was. This escaped me. Anyway, Matt Moore. I was thinking of Ryan Moore because I think he's a golfer. That was the name that was stuck in my head. The Landry had those targets when Tannehill was around too. So you're getting a quarterback upgrade over what they were throwing out there last year. Amendola is a guy. I'd be a little worried about the touchdown upside. That would be the only thing that would sort of cap his ultimate kind of stuff, because they did throw to Landry in the red zone last year. So maybe that's the plan again as well here. That'd be something I'd probably want to take a wait and see on approach. And I do agree with you that from a DraftKings perspective, just with that 1 point PPR, he could be walking into a situation that shows him a lot of targets, only 4,200. All right, let's get into the next game. We have the Niners going in and playing the Vikings. Obviously, the big news here that came out a week ago, Jerick McKinnon tears his ACL, brutal blow for the Niners, for a guy that they had just kind of gone all in on to bring in as a look to be a three down back in this scheme. They, specifically picked him out as the guy to just take the reins in this offense, at least from the backfield standpoint. So they lose him, and it looks like now they're going to start Alfred Morris and back him up / bring in Matt Breida on third down. We are sort of gifted in the terms of, not wanting to maybe play a guy that they have such a bad matchup here against the Vikings. They're heavy underdogs, -6.5 going into Minnesota. I love Garoppolo this season. From an overall raw points perspective, the McKinnon thing might help him, because I think they're going to have to just throw more, and I'm just not sure this is the spot. Give us your we talked a little bit about Marcus Goodwin and Garcon on the podcast yesterday. I'm probably going to downgrade some of them just based on some other things that I'm looking at. But give me your thoughts on the Niners, and then we can switch it over to the Vikings. They're bringing back a lot of the same crew, but with a new quarterback.
Yeah, so I think, first of all, on the running back side, I'm very, very skeptical about playing these running backs, even if this were a better matchup. I think Alfred Morris, we've seen a lot of Alfred Morris starts in our time here at DFSR, and they've rarely been very inspiring. The fact that he has Matt Breida breathing down his neck isn't a really welcome sign either. I think there's some chance that the plan is to play Morris on the first set and then bring Breida in, and when they realize, okay, this guy's actually young and can run really fast and Morris can't do any of those things, that he winds up sticking. The concern I have there is, against a tough rushing defense, and with Breida missing the final three preseason games with this shoulder thing, you never know for sure if that's actually just precautionary or what is going on there. But you have to think, with their young running back that they're feeling really good about, that they're not just going to smash him into the teeth of a defense if there's any doubt at all. And there might still be doubt in my mind. So I could see just a full-on running back by committee there. And for me, I just don't think I would touch it.
And on the Minnesota side, Dalvin Cook, there is speculation that he will just not see a full workload. He's another guy. Our system is very high on Cook this season, with good reason. He was looking like an elite usage back last year to start the year, and then obviously got hurt. We really downgraded his touches for week one. I'm totally fine with it. It's not even a guy. Honestly, it's not even a guy that I want to go so far in GPPs for, because in thinking about this, there is no reason for the Vikings to go all in on this guy week one. They have Super Bowl aspirations. Even a loss in week one would not derail them thinking they could go to the Super Bowl. And I don't think they're going to lose. Doesn't seem like they're going to lose. I mean, Stranger Things and all, but this is just, I just can't imagine a scenario. So let's go through the scenarios. They're winning. They're winning by two touchdowns earlier, something like that. I feel like we see way more Latavius Murray, because it's why not? This is the guy. I'd rather let's have him grind out some of these carries. Let's just go full running back by committee. They're losing. Maybe he sees more in the passing game, and I still don't think the snap count's going to be high enough. So I just I really struggle. And plus, with their other weapons, I don't know. This is Cook's a guy our system's dying to have you play because of the pace of play in San Francisco and just their overall defensive scheme. And I just am so worried about the snap count from the ACL tear that he's another guy I will probably end up just leaving off my GPP list.
Yeah, I think so for me too. The other thing that hurts Cook in my calculations here is the fact that Latavius Murray, we've seen him be a goal line ball hog in the past too. And, Cook got some goal line carries when he was still healthy last season, but it's just another question mark for me. Right. So another situation where I'm just happy to wait a week. There's so many great plays for this week. again, for big tournaments, you're going to take the risk that you're going to take. But in cash, like, there's so many good plays. Why take the risk on Dalvin Cook? Seems like a classic thing.
No chance for me in cash. If there's any kind of snap count issue with a guy in week one, of the, you know, how soft some of these pricing is, mm-hmm. I'm just not willing to go there. Now, they do bring in Cousins in the offseason. They made him the guy, paid up, you know, paid full rate for a quarterback to work with this receiving core. They're bringing back Thielen, Diggs, and Kyle Rudolph. What are your thoughts here with a new quarterback going into a new situation? Is this one, you know, we have a long track record on a guy like Cousins. He's a really, really good quarterback. You have to think that the weapons he's given now is a significant upgrade over what he was using in Washington. Is that enough to talk you close to the cash game edge on a quarterback that we obviously know the risk here being he switches teams?
Yeah, the quarterback piece, I don't mind. I don't want to speculate on who the wide receivers will be. I think both, you know, Thielen and Diggs are both just pretty aggressively priced for a new quarterback situation. And either of those guys could climb up into the 8,000 range, but I don't know. They're just too expensive for me. But that being said, those are pretty good weapons for Cousins to work with, probably arguably better weapons than he had last year when he, you know, carried a higher price tag than he does now too. So, yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind him, I guess. Again,
well, let me ask you a question.
Guy? I only have to play one, right? So will he be the guy? Probably not, but I wouldn't like make fun of anyone if he did wind up being the guy for them.
He's priced below Brady, Breeze, Watson, Cam, and Roethlisberger. Like, you dip down into him, and then you get Phillip Rivers. In the lineups I mentioned before, where you kind of stack all these studs, the Kamara, David Johnson, Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen, Cousins, or Rivers becomes that guy. Do you have great affinity for one over the other? Like, let's say we were in this decision, because I think maybe people make this close decision going into week one. Would you take the track record on Rivers and call it a day? Do you like the weapons that Cousins have been given, and maybe he just has a pretty high floor in the matchup because of the pace for the Niners? Like, if you had to choose between those two guys, where would you go?
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty close one. I think that, I mean, with a gun to my head, I'm always going to be take the coward's way out and go with safety. And I think Rivers probably has the edge there. You know, a couple considerations there. First of all, Kansas City last season allowed the second highest yards per attempt. So that's just a better matchup overall. 1.2 yards per attempt, or 10% higher than San Francisco, who is more middle of the pack. I think that's enough, given that, you know, in my mind, these guys are sort of a toss-up, that I would just lean Rivers and probably call it a day. Also, just the safety of being on the same team, looking over there and seeing Keenan Allen every play, you know, not losing just even a couple snaps a day to some random stupid thing happening where guys aren't quite on the same page. I think if you're just looking for safety and not upside, I think I like Rivers.
Yep, it's pretty close for me, and I probably would go that direction too, just for, you know, from a Vegas standpoint, these two teams are right around the same implied points, or within half a point of each other. So if you're even trying to, I'm sort of randomly choosing these two guys to compare, but I think it's a useful thing because they do represent a little bit of savings off that top tier. They're about 5 or 6% cheaper than that next group above them. All right, next game, we have the Steelers going in and facing the Browns. We did talk at length about Le'Veon Bell and James Conner yesterday. As of this recording, 10:20 Eastern time on Friday, there has been no Le'Veon Bell news, which is to say he has not reported. He has not reported. We don't know. It is really looking like he is not going to play. So at this point, he would need to get in a practice today or tomorrow. The guy hasn't played at all. The team seems like they hate him right now. We talk about that, you know, all the negative stuff. Which, the only reason I mention that is because I mentioned it yesterday. It's just rare. Like, teammates usually stand by each other, especially when it comes to money, because like the company line is, dude, we get it. You're trying to get paid. You know, like it makes sense. Like, it only helps us. You know, rising tide, you know, raises all ships, right? So like, we get it. We don't love it. We wish you were here. And you're going for money, that helps us all get money. And these guys have gone completely about face on their reaction to him. So I think that doesn't help anyway. So I think we can agree, if he doesn't play, Connor really looks like the cash game play against a Browns team, though, that, you know, was good against the run last year. We've also talked at length about Roethlisberger. Let's talk about the receivers here. Now, Antonio Brown comes into the season as probably, you know, maybe for talent-wise, the best, if maybe the second best receiver in football, if you want to put DeAndre Hopkins up there with him as well. They are going to get a full season of Juju as the second receiver, and that he was pretty highly targeted. And then the only injury note that I can really find beyond the Le'Veon Bell thing is that Vance McDonald's is looking questionable, so we might get Jesse James. What do you think about the Steelers' passing game here, especially, at least from a DVOA perspective? The Browns were really good against the run last season.
Yeah, I mean, I think Connor's just, the price tag is too cheap, so you're probably okay regardless of Cleveland's DVOA skills last year against the run. On the passing side, you know, I mentioned Roethlisberger as a totally respectable play. I could see him being the guy I wind up with here, given that, especially with Bell being out, they probably will tend to lean on the pass a little bit more. I think Brown is just basically a cash game play regardless of what's going on. And it's just going to come down to more of, does it make sense to spend up at wide receiver or does it make sense to spend up elsewhere? Smith-Schuster just strikes me as an actual big tournament play. Tons of upside there. He was excellent in, I think he averaged like 7.5 targets and 98 yards per game in the games where he actually started last season. Yeah. So totally playable. Just a good receiver overall. But again, is that really one of the guys that you're going to pay up for? Hoping that it works out that way this season, maybe. It's just not a guy I feel like I must play. Like, if he's not in my lineups, I don't know. Maybe this is just my emotion talking here, but there are some guys where I think about it and I'm like, oh, dude, like, if Alvin Kamara is not on my team, I'm going to, like, have some questions to answer for myself if he's a 70% start. If that happens to Smith-Schuster, I feel like I could live with it. So that's just kind of how I feel about it right now.
Interesting note here about Bell, an underrated thing. We can talk a lot about the carries for Connor. Bell averaged 21 carries per game last year. Also averaged 7 targets a game. That's a lot of targets. Oh, yeah. That is a lot.
True. That's good. That's a good point. It's like a receiver being out too.
Exactly. Like the Steelers averaged 37 pass attempts per game, one of the highest in the league. And seven of them went to Bell, you know, nearly 20%. So that is, you can't give them all to Connor. This is, by the way, Antonio Brown averaged 11.6, and then Juju averaged only 5.3. But again, that's a little different because he averaged more once he was the full starter. I think when you start taking a look at where those Bell targets go, if you start apportioning them just back to Brown, to Juju, maybe to Jesse James a little bit, that is. Those guys might actually just be all coming a little bit underpriced. And by the way, the one last thing about Connor is, I mentioned before about cash game running backs. If do they check the box of, are they going to be on the field in all situations? It really looks like Connor is the every down back. The Steelers have shown nothing, even in the past with guys like D'Angelo Williams, that they want to bring in other running backs. Their guy. They bring in scheme guys that can do all the stuff. And I think Connor's on the field. So that's another reason I just feel safe. But yeah, those 7 targets for Bell, that's just, you're right. That's just another very good wide receiver being out of the mix. All right, let's move into the Browns here. Josh Gordon is going to be on a quote snap count, one of my least favorite terms in all of football because it doesn't mean anything. They call it pitch count even though it snaps. This is a stupid thing. Like, why just not call it snap count? Like, why they take it from a totally different sport even though they have the thing that they have? They
Who
have
calls
the
it
actual
pitch count. I've never heard that before.
That's what Hugh Jackson called it. He's going to be on a pitch count even though they have the other thing that's just called snaps. That's just such a stupid thing. Like, it just makes no sense. Just use the actual word for the thing. It's not like you're not being
I'm
smart.
With you, buddy. I'm with you. Don't get derailed. We got to
Okay, I'm calming down. I'm sorry. All right, a couple things here. So Josh Gordon is not going to be on a snap count going into this game. Not going to start. Who knows? Maybe he sits out a series, maybe more. They bring in Jarvis Landry and Tyrod Taylor in the offseason to replace DeShone Kizer and whatever smattering of losers they also had in the wide receiver core last year. They also bring in Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde is going to get the start against the Steelers defense, which gets a big downgrade in the run game with Ryan Shazier out. You've seen people tweet about this recently, that the Steelers did allow more on the ground once he was injured, and that the Browns have a very good offensive line. Now, they're underdogs here. What do you see in terms of Carlos Hyde as a GPP play? I think it's tough to go there in cash because of the Vegas line. But in terms of a GPP play, do you think he has upside, especially if we're going to like correlate stack him and plus the Steelers wide receiver core?
Jeez, Carlos Hyde, I don't know. I'm not seeing any real reason to dive into the Browns running game. They haven't really demonstrated any ability to run the ball well in the past. And Hyde, he was also on a different team that had trouble running the ball last season, but averaged less than 4 yards a carry last year. Kroll, in a similar role last year, averaged 4.1 yards a carry. It's not like you're getting him for free or anything. I think maybe if you would, it would be a more interesting discussion, but why? I
think you're going to be surprised by his ownership in GPPs. I think it's going to be, that's not going to be high, but like,
he's cheap. I mean, he's 5,900, but that's like the same price Kroll was. Is he really better? He's a bigger name, but I don't know. I don't get it. It's not nothing that excites me personally.
I think there's a game script. The reason I put it out there is because I think because I like the receiving core for the Steelers, I think there is a game script that could happen here where you get a pretty nice game stack and it works with Hyde getting a lot of carries, right? This is like they get up early somehow. Like, you know, maybe the Steelers are fundamentally much worse than we think they're going to be without Bell. It remains to be seen. Again, they're still favorites in this game. And I'm with you that it seems crazy to go out on a limb. I'm not talking cash at all. Because I like the other side of the game, and if there's any way the Browns could get up in this game, I think Hyde would probably have to be a big part of it. Now, the other thing to think about here is Jarvis Landry led the league in targets last year. It's unclear to whether he gets a quarterback, let's call it a lateral move in quarterback, going to Tyrod Taylor, but it's a totally new scheme. What do you do with wide receivers like this going into just a totally new team, new quarterback, new everything, knowing how great he was last year? How much of that can we translate into this season with him on the Browns?
None. That's my short answer. You can't translate any of it. He's got some talent. Quarterback is something close to a joke. The Browns have demonstrated no real ability to come up with good offensive schemes that work for wide receivers outside of Josh Gordon. So, no, I'm not going to be playing him in any formats until I see what's going to happen there.
It's very funny about how bullish people have been, like bettors have been on the Browns this year. Like they've swung the line a decent amount from the open, plus the Bell injury kind of thing happened. I believe that their odds like to win the win their division kind of went up because a lot of people put money in on the Browns. I don't know if that's like an HBO Hard Knocks effect. Like they just saw these guys and now you get to see them practice and you think they're better than everybody.
Those guys have big muscles, dude. Have you seen them on that show?
Browns are a very stacked. Interesting team. Yeah, they're just a very interesting team in general. And remember, this is a team that did not win a game last year. They've had
Yeah, we'll see if you still feel like they're an interesting team in 3 weeks.
Because this will be I say the word interesting a lot. This is, to me, this is the most interesting game of the whole week, for like just from so many perspectives. It's like, not because it's like going to be necessarily great football, because I think if you're going to learn a great amount of things, like with the Connor thing, this Browns team is a totally new team. I think it wouldn't shock me totally if they just came out and were like a lot better than expected, and also wouldn't shock me if they just continue to stink. I find it hard to believe they're going to be as bad as last year. Like, I do think they have enough upgrades across just different positions that I think they're just are going to be better. And I'm just wondering if it's only be marginally better rather than significantly better, like some people think. Like last year, if this game opened with this exact same team, they opened with the exact same team, this would be like Pittsburgh, even with the Bell news, would be like Pittsburgh, like -7.5 road favorites, I think. So I don't know. There's something interesting happening here. Let's keep moving on. Last 1 o'clock game. There's two more. Bengals go in and play the Colts. We have talked at length about Andrew Luck in the last two podcasts about what to kind of make of him. I'll tell you what, Vegas believes that he is healthy. More than 25 implied points for them in the dome against a Bengals team. Kind of likes the Bengals right around 23 points. The over-under started at 47, went up to 48 with points coming evenly distributed. So people just like this as maybe possibly a high-scoring game between Luck and Andy Dalton. Let's start on the Bengals side. Looks like Joe Mixon's going to get more carries this year. I don't know. Some people like him more than others. I feel like I liked him at all the wrong times last year. I try to really factor in how much that affects my decision making. They're also fully healthy in the receiving core, at least for right now, with AJ Green, John Ross, and Tyler Eifert coming back. Anything to like about the Bengals here? It seems like there should be, because Indianapolis was just a totally garbage defense last season. Didn't make any real huge improvements. Is this an interesting GPP stack for you?
Yeah, it's a nothing more than a big tournament stack. I don't know if it's worth really going down into the weeds on this one. I think us playing Mixon on all the wrong times is a salient observation. I think it's worth noting that with everyone probably pretty healthy here, you have to believe that Bernard is going to come in on third downs and be the pass-catching back, and that makes the running game unplayable to me. AJ Green is always a threat to score the most points in any given week. We've seen a real trailing off in terms of consistency for him, but the electric playmaking should still be there. And then you have other guys just kind of kicking around that people have been bullish on in the past that, you know, have kind of come and gone out of favor, guys like Tyler Boyd, Tyler Eifert, multiple Tylers going there. Any of those guys could be a guy that would be in a winning GPP lineup. Nothing interesting at all for cash, though, for me.
With our cornerback and wide receiver multipliers, AJ Green has the second best multiplier going into this game, right behind Keenan Allen, in terms of the matchup that he's going to get, that he's going to draw from the Indianapolis secondary. They are bringing it's Harrison, Desir, and Harrison, Moore, and Desir are going to be back there, all rate significantly to very below average, according to a lot of metrics. So AJ Green is getting a pretty huge boost going in here. I'm a little concerned about the overall targets only because they have so many other guys back. It kind of does make me like Andy Dalton from a GPP perspective, especially if they're playing catch up at all and they have to take to the air. Dalton, mostly just because he's coming pretty cheap in a situation where, again, Indianapolis was very bad against the pass this year, and there's not a lot of reason to expect they've made even marginal improvements on that scheme, except to say that they might just have the ball more because Andrew Luck is their quarterback instead of Brissett, which does make a difference, right? Like being able to have the ball more makes a really big difference in terms of just keeping the other team off the field. And they ranked 32nd out of 32 teams against the pass in 2017.
Seems bad.
Does look like Marlon Mack is going to sit. Jordan Wilkins looks like he's going to draw the start, coming very cheap. I mean, how much do we want to put on a rookie running back, assuming that Mack doesn't play? They do have Luck coming back. Obviously, we talked about him, you know, maybe even bordering as a cash game play. What are your thoughts here on the Colts situation? They have one of the highest implied totals of the entire week.
Yeah, I think Wilkins is pretty interesting big tournament play again. They demonstrated some difficulty running the ball last season, and I have not any huge reason to believe that Wilkins would have, you know, some kind of blow away knockout success that none of the guys that tried last year had. Still definitely an interesting big tournament guy, though. I think in the passing game, you know, I'm on record as a big Andrew Luck believer. I think the guy, you know, the fantasy world is such a what have you done for me lately industry. And quarterback, and that makes sense in football, actually, because especially running backs, like, you can just lose your legs and then you're done. When it comes to quarterbacks, though, we've seen quarterbacks with Luck's talent push really deep into their careers. Now, many of them haven't had shoulder injuries to their throwing arm, so that's certainly a red flag. But yeah, I think Luck totally playable. If he was my cash game quarterback, I wouldn't feel nervous going into week one here. I think outside of him, basically the entire team's price is depressed based on a rough season last year. And if everything is clicking, you're going to see T.Y. Hilton. He was a lock stock $8,000 player on FanDuel forever. So you could see that 12% jump back up to the 8,000 range. You could see Doyle weighing in around 6,500. All like Hilton, just because of his conversion issues, is almost, it's tough for him to be a cash game play even when things are really clicking. So he's a tournament only guy. But Doyle, to me, great cash game tight end.
Worth noting here that when we have floor and ceiling projections as well, like we have our normal average weighted mean projection, but then also in our data set, we have floor projections and ceiling projections. Third highest overall projected wide receiver in terms of ceiling is Hilton. It's Antonio Brown, Keenan Allen, and then T.Y. Hilton. Hilton actually ranks above DeAndre Hopkins in terms of ceiling. Now, again, this is like some standard deviation stuff. A lot of it's born out of touchdowns, but it makes sense because Hilton, like we talked about it before, Hilton is either just completely might as well not have suited up, or just the absolute total nuts receiver. And it seems like, I don't know, I feel like we have multiple seasons, especially with Luck around, where that seemed to be the case. Like, he was either just flaming guys downfield over and over and over again, or just going and grabbing a coffee and seeing what, you know, waiting until the game ends. So I think that in terms of Hilton, from an upside perspective, I will definitely have Luck Hilton here. Luck Doyle, to some degree, I think Doyle is a cash game play. We talked about him yesterday, and then we'll kind of get into you know, we mentioned Jordan Wilkins. They have Christian Michael there as well. So I'm just not as, I don't know, I'm not as bullish as Wilkins as maybe some other people are.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
And again, this is a very interesting game for me. Okay, Texans go in and play the Patriots. Patriots have the second highest implied total here at 28.25. They're -6 points home favorites against the Texans, who will bring back Deshaun Watson less than a year removed away from ACL injury. The over-under starts at 51, just creeps down to 50.5, coming really off the Patriots side. Let's start with the Texans. How much do we want to have exposure to Deshaun Watson? I don't think there's a question about whether or not, well, maybe there is whether or not, but how much exposure do we want to have to a guy like Watson, who was simply, I think, yeah, the overall points per game best quarterback last year? It looked like he was running incredibly hot on touchdowns, which is due for some regression.
Yeah.
Also gets a good matchup here against the Patriots in a game they could be playing catch up, and has one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver in football, to throw to. Where do you stand in terms of exposure to the Texans here in GBP? Or I don't know if you can talk yourself into them in cash.
Yeah, I think the Texans passing game will be one of the more popularly owned big tournament stacks. It's for a very, very good reason. If they come back and everything is firing, you're getting a value, and arguably the guys with the very highest upside. I mean, we saw Watson, like, in a heartbeat, he can just drop 35 fantasy points. So there's not really a whole lot for me to say there, other than, I mean, the other part is, if you want to run this as a game stack, I think that's actually how you do it, because, you know, if you figure if Watson and Hopkins are just going off, the Patriots aren't going to just roll over and die. You're going to probably see a pretty decent game out of Brady and Chris Hogan and, you know, people that are putting the ball in the air there. So, yeah, good big tournament play. Again, for cash, I'm just happy to wait a week and make sure, because there's so many good plays based on the inefficient pricing situation that I just don't need to tear my hair out trying to figure out. You know, I don't need to be a week early on these guys, I guess, is my cash game feeling here.
On the Fantasy Pros podcast, they mentioned this yesterday, so I don't want to take full credit, even though this is something that I have seen and heard before, is that typically with the Patriots, the way the Patriots roll is Belichick's idea is do everything to take away the team's first and best option and make all the other guys do something. So, and they just do this with wide receiver ones over and over again. If it means double teaming that guy all the time, they do it. If you look at the game last year, the Texans beat the Patriots in New England and scored 36 points. It was Hopkins' second least targeted game of the entire season. So I don't know. I'm taking out one game and a narrative that I have, you know, heard before, and actually we'll just go back and dive into just to double check on it. That'd be my only concern, is that there's just say, hey, dude, let Will Fuller beat us, right? Like, let Ryan Griffin beat us. Like, that. Those can be the guys that beat us through the pass game. Let Watson run. It's just not going to be DeAndre Hopkins. That'd be my only concern, and I still love him from the upside play because, you know, that those things work until they don't work, and you still have just insane talent levels. Let's talk about the Patriots here. They come in with some question marks. They are big favorites at home in a place, in a spot where you would like to target running backs, and I just don't know if you can. Burkhead has not, I don't think he's fully practiced yet. They're talking about easing him in to the situation. Yep. Sony Michel is behind on his practice schedule. Unclear if he's going to play or not. They have Jeremy Hill, so kind of a little rafflecopter on that one. I just don't know what he does for you.
Rafflecopter.
If he ends up being, I don't know, just one of these guys that randomly comes in for the Patriots and just runs for 100 yards and everyone loves him and the guy just disappears again. And then they have James White. I would like to talk about him a little bit. And then a passing game situation where they have bring back Hogan and they promote Philip Dorsett from within and then bring in Cordarrelle Patterson. And obviously, they still have Gronk. It's still Tom Brady. They are expected to put up a lot of points. I want to have exposure to these guys. What are your thoughts? And, you know, if you were kind of maybe going to tier them from a GPP or cash game perspective, who are you feeling good about? Who would you almost be willing to go out on a limb for? I think this is a pretty interesting situation. Maybe one of the most interesting of the week in a single team situation.
Dude, you must be just like over the moon with interest right now in this week.
I'm so interested. I'm excited, man. This is good.
I am too.
There's so many.
Too.
This is why we're already in an hour. We haven't even hit the four.
Just teasing you, buddy. So you have to label this a mega podcast, by the way. This is our mega week one podcast, because then people get excited about it being
long. We just
long
crested over the hour mark, and so we just crested over the mega mark. Yep, it's going to get mega podcast.
That's it, baby. So Brady and Hogan are elite cash game plays for me. You know, just great values. Hogan at 6,700, bordering in that kind of must play territory for me, actually. A guy that, again, I'd have to look in the mirror and ask myself, why is Chris Hogan not in my lineup right now? I think Gronk, he's just at that Gronk price point. You know, he's going to be the only tight end at the $8,000 price point. If you compare him to his peers at the $8,000 price tag, and, you know, I mean, you get a little discount if you go for him from like David Johnson or Alvin Kamara or, you know, some of the Antonio Brown stuff like that. But, like, do you really want to play him over, like, Keenan Allen for cash? No way. So, good big tournament play. You can absolutely stack Brady, Hogan, and Gronk. I think if you want to try and guess right on running backs, that's been a winning strategy for big tournaments in the past. You know, if this happens to be the week that they just want to put Sony Michel out on display and he gets 25 touches and catches 7 balls or something like that, then you're going to feel pretty excited. But I won't be speculating on the running backs because there's better speculative running backs for me in week one.
I love James White as a tournament play. He is a guy.
Yeah, he's
if we are worried at all about, if we're worried at all about the playing time for some of these other running backs, if there's a situation where, you know, Burkhead is already kind of an injury guy and is maybe possibly not full health, and there's kind of a situation where maybe Texas can get up early. They have the kind of offense that can get up early on a team. And if we think there's any kind of downgrade in the rest of this receiving core, like the Philip Dorsett, Cordarrelle Patterson thing is maybe possibly like a massive downgrade from what they were getting from Amendola last year, then I think there's a situation where double-digit targets for White, there's a, you know, enough percentage chance that he sees double-digit targets as, because he's done it in the past, he's a guy that knows their system, and we also know that Brady will just, they'll pick out something that works and do it over and over and over again. And White has had games where that was the case, right? And if he can step in and carry any of the running back load, because he's not a big volume guy at all, but like 15 to 18 total target plus runs from White is not, to me, out of the realm of possibility. And if you think that is, if there's, you know, some chance that happens, I love him as a tournament play coming very cheap, especially on DraftKings, so the full point PPR, because he works so much just like sort of as a receiver. He's one of my top tournament guys. Not going to be like overexposed to him by any means, but I think for guys that are coming cheap out of this game, I think he's probably my favorite play. Maybe a little Philip Dorsett. Not really any Cordarrelle Patterson, I don't think. And I'm with you that Hogan, strikes me as just having just huge upside just because of the touchdown conversion rate and how much they throw to him in the red zone. Yep, this would be an interesting one to see. It's interesting again. I got to find a new adjective. Or I got to find a new word to describe
it. Sorry, but I didn't mean to get in your head on
that. Well, now it's in my head. Now it's completely in my head. This is a game that we're going to really want to hone in on. Really going to want to hone in on just because of the overall points. And we talked about Brady as a cash game play. Let's get into some of these 4 o'clock games. Kansas City goes in and takes on San Diego. San Diego -3.5 home favorites. Yeah, the big news, obviously, for the Chiefs is they bring in Patrick Mahomes in the offseason after trading away Alex Smith to the Redskins. The rest of the team is fairly intact, and they promoted Mahomes from within, so there's reason to believe he just fully understands the scheme, and they were comfortable with the trade. So there's at least from a comfort standpoint, they felt fully comfortable just turning the keys over to Mahomes here in the offseason. Big arm. There's reason to believe Tyreek Hill is going to see a lot more opportunity because they just even I know you can't take a ton away from the preseason, and he just was torching guys on deep balls because Mahomes can just throw the ball like 70 yards with really kind of pretty easily, much more than Alex Smith ever could. I mean, obviously the knock on Smith was that, you know, accurate short game passer, never saw a long ball he wanted to throw. Do you think
that's my story when I play QB too? So I'm with him there.
Yeah, dude, they never let you play quarterback.
I'm not sure I played quarterback for my cross-country team in high school when we would play against the other cross-country teams at the big meets. So you can stop
would
that
like
one.
Would you like me to edit that?
Ask anybody.
I'm fine to edit that out in post if you want to go there.
well, the fact that whenever when you start hear a fantasy analyst say, you know, I used to play quarterback for my cross-country team. I'm going to have to start referring to that more often.
Not the biggest trust builder in the world. But, okay, what do we think about the Chiefs here? This seems like one that we're going to want to have exposure to in GPPs, obviously. This is not a team that's sneaking up on you by any means. You mentioned, we were kind of talking about Kareem Hunt leading the league in rushing yards last year, which I guess I knew at some level and just still was kind of surprised by because it just seemed like he had so many weeks where he failed to show up, mostly weeks where I rostered him. What do we think about the Chiefs and how much ownership do you think we'll see from guys like Mahomes and Hill and Stacks, Mahomes and Kelsey, and then we can move over to the Chargers side?
Probably too much would be my guess. I think, again, you can just be as promising as you actually want to be at the quarterback position, and when you just show up on Sunday and the speed of the game shows up and all that other stuff, like, you just never know. So, and the fact, and it us never knowing is what makes people good big tournament plays from time to time, but it also kind of kills you if your big goal is to try to get a guy that's like off people's radar. And so for that reason, there's no reason for me to think that, like, we've never seen Mahomes he could throw the ball 20 times this week. there's just no telling. So yeah, I won't be touching Mahomes at all. I think Hunt is a very, very interesting big tournament play. Did lead the league in rushing last season and did it in an extremely high standard deviation way, which is great for us. If for your big tournament, sure, if he gets 20 yards or 80 yards in a game, it doesn't matter. You want that 160-yard game where he drops 100 receiving yards to or whatever. So Hunt, very interesting for me there. I think Tyreek Hill, also pretty cool. I think probably people will be a little bit too much on Kelsey here. Hill did a lot with not too much opportunity last season and without a quarterback that could throw the ball deep. And so, I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive to say that you wouldn't want to play Mahomes, but you would want to play Hill. But maybe you can play Hill as like the standalone receiver and play some other quarterback alongside him. And, you know, you can kind of, like, in the off chance that, well, not off, actually. If Hill is good and Mahomes is only average, this is just a general big tournament strategy here, and you think Mahomes will be over-owned relative to how much his upside actually is, you can kind of get away with picking Hill, getting the good game from him, and then getting the quarterback who just has the better game than Holmes. So that's perhaps an overly complicated answer to that question, but yeah, there's a lot to be interested about here. Not necessarily something that you have to feel like you have to have some exposure, in my mind.
In week 17 last year, Mahomes did get the start against Denver. He threw 35 times. They won that game. They were headed into the playoffs. He does have one NFL game under his belt. He was not all that efficient, not 63% of his passes, but Denver was a very good pass defense. The other reason I like Mahomes from a GPP standpoint, and I think others will as well, he will run the ball. Smith ran the ball last year. Mahomes did run 7 times in that game, didn't get very far. Again, that's a very good defense. They're playing late in the season. I think there's a lot of upside on him. So I think that this is definitely a situation where I will have exposure to, especially if I want to run a little bit of Melvin Gordon going the other way. I like the kind of like game stacking it as well with Keenan Allen if this turns into a total shootout, which I think that there's reason to believe it could. Like you have like a Mahomes Hill Keenan Allen stack, you have a Rivers Hill Keenan Allen stack, something like that.
Sure. None of these guys are unplayable, by the way. I'm just talking about how I'm going to be prioritizing things. And you won't be alone in trying to take this shot on Mahomes. That's my only thing I want to convey to people here.
You mentioned, you know, how much of a high standard deviation coefficient of variation that Kareem Hunt had. He was like a receiver last year. He was like a bad receiver, actually. Like his coefficient of variation was 0.62. That is like 0.25 higher than other quote-unquote consistent running backs. Point two higher. Like he was all over the map. Maybe his role expands and he catches more passes this year because they trust him in more third down situations. If that was the case, then he's definitely way too cheap. And we could see it, and I'm just not fully ready to believe that's the case. We talked at length about Keenan Allen. We had talked about Phillip Rivers as a cash game play. What do you think about Melvin Gordon? Melvin Gordon was in that trending up toward that elite usage kind of guy last season. He ran the ball 284 times. That was third most in the league. He also had 83 targets in the passing game, and among running backs, that was seventh. So this is a guy who they showed they were completely willing to just give the ball to a ton during the course of the season. They are home favorites. The Chiefs defense, I don't know, you could say that they're probably better if Eric Berry plays, and he's questionable to play, and they bring Kendall Fuller to swap out for Marcus Peters, sort of. Where do you stand with a guy like Gordon in terms of cash? How close of a cash game play with you? I think we can agree that the usage is there. Do the other things line up enough to make you want to play him in cash?
Yeah, Gordon's a good play. At least a high floor play. I don't know if you're really like getting away with anything by playing Melvin Gordon at these prices, but if he's in your lineup, you shouldn't be embarrassed. The thing about Gordon is a lot of volume, was really inefficient. And the thing I kept worrying about Gordon last year was he was just so inefficient on a yards per carry basis that I was worried that eventually he would lose some opportunity. Didn't ever really happen. So I think if they were willing to stick with him last year, they didn't really bring in any obvious replacements. You have to figure he'll have the same usage issue.
Right now, they're around the same price here. Gordon's 400 more than Christian McCaffrey. Right now, we have McCaffrey projected for less than a point more, which does make a big difference in football. So I'm just trying to ground this in, like, how much of a difference this makes. Let's say you had the savings. Because pricing's soft on DraftKings, they're within $400 of each other. Maybe that's the difference of, you know, one cheap tight end to the next cheap tight end, or like a slightly better defense to a slightly worse team defense where we know, or maybe even a quarterback where these guys are all so tightly priced that you can just go $400 cheaper. Would you feel better that with Gordon than McCaffrey in this situation? Home favorites, not overwhelming home favorites in that sort of unknown zone. But McCaffrey, I feel like we are probably speculating a little bit, maybe a lot of it on, maybe too much. Maybe the McCaffrey buzz is just that train is set to go off the rails. I'm not really sure. Would you feel more comfortable with Gordon than McCaffrey, sort of knowing, having more of the knowns out there in front of us?
Well, yeah. Okay, so for me, this one is different based on which site you're talking about. I think if you're talking about, it sounds like you're talking about DraftKings based on the prices you listed.
Only talking about DraftKings, yes. I'm not talking about FanDuel.
McCaffrey caught 80 balls last year. Gordon was one of the most highly targeted wide receivers, highly targeted running backs out of the passing game. And McCaffrey had almost as many catches as Gordon had targets. So yeah, if you're talking more strictly in a PPR standpoint, like, no one is on the same level as McCaffrey, I don't think, going into the season. He was the 21st highest targeted player overall, to say nothing of what he got in the running game. And I think most people's speculation, rightfully, is that we can probably rate to see more carries. Now, if you had to pay more for him, just in a vacuum, I don't know that you can count on him being like a three-down back, series in and series out. I think on DraftKings, at that $6,400 price tag, it would be hard for him to not have a pretty decent floor, just based on the simple fact that he's going to, you know, wind up this season with definitely more than 100 targets this year. So, that's kind of my gut feeling. Like, when in doubt on DraftKings, if things are feeling pretty close, I'm going to take the guy who rates to be targeted more in the passing game, just because it's free. It's like a free 10 yards every time they decide to throw him the ball, you know?
Yep. If we're comparing those two guys, Chargers do come in with three and a half more implied points than the Panthers this week. I was kind of just more throwing it out there as maybe these guys are close. I'm trying to in terms of like the safety situation, like, you know, because McCaffrey, again, let's say this, I am not speculating at all about the targets. What I am speculating and what is driving him into cash games right now is the big boost in run in running attempts. Yep. That is actually, and that is where I'm getting, that's where I get a little concerned. So like, no speculation at all. Targets, great. He's awesome. And they seem like they've signaled that he's going to be the guy. We'll get to this in a second, but I'm just not totally positive. All right, let's get into the next 4 o'clock game. Redskins go in and play the Cardinals. Redskins come revenge game. Redskins come out and name Adrian Peterson the starting running back. So
oh, baby.
Got a revenge game on our hands. Cardinals Yikes. Come in as -1 home favorites against Washington. Washington does bring in Alex Smith in the offseason. They are getting Doxson and Crowder back in terms of the passing game, as well as Jordan Reed, and they still have Chris Thompson out there. And then obviously the Cardinals are bringing back DJ as the single biggest, like, maybe offseason add in terms of just moving from what they had before and then moving back into, you know, arguably the best running back in football. How much do you want to speculate in this game? We did talk about DJ as a cash game play. He does not check the box as big home favorite. Unfortunately, maybe for us, not a lot of other running backs do. So if you want to knock that part of it out, then we're just maybe looking just on opportunity. You can choose the team you want to start with here. I do find that there's probably some things that we can hone in on, and I'm not sure I'm overwhelmed by the amount of opportunity that we see fantasy-wise here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you kind of summed it up for me, which is like, when you're walking into a situation, again, now we're an hour and 15 minutes into this podcast, and we've talked very excitedly about a lot of situations and a lot of guys. And when we're looking at a game at this point and saying like, I don't know.
Right.
So again, given that I don't have to play team players from every team, I mean, if you're talking on the late slate, then maybe we can talk a little bit. But yeah, just walking into this game, like after listing off a million different plays, I don't know. Like, is there some big thing that's jumping off the page to you here? Because really nothing captures my fancy.
It's just the DJ thing and how much they get him back into it and how much he touches the ball. Because
yeah, and he's a good play. Like, is there a lot more to say about it? Like,
no, that's it. And I think that's. I mean, I'm not interested in Adrian Peterson at all. I cannot believe that guy's starting in 2018. For a running back. I mean, they just brought him in, so they had some injuries issues in the backfield that kind of submarined some of their original plan. So it wasn't like it was their full offseason plan. And this is he still stinks. Whatever. I don't mind some of the receivers and Crowder and Doxson. Crowder did have over 100 targets last year in only 15 games. Doesn't have anything close to touchdown upside because of the way they run his routes. I guess it's mostly DJ here. I'm looking one of these years, Larry Fitzgerald is going to be old and bad. You've lost money if you've thought the previous 3 years have been it. But eventually,
and Fitzgerald, by the way, just another guy who's like a pretty decent big tournament play. Like, it's a totally unknown passing situation, which makes it unplayable for cash games. But if you're just looking at big tournaments, like, seems fine. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he averaged 10 targets a game last year. They do have Christian Kirk there now, but he's yep. rookie, and I'm not sure. You can't put a lot of stock in that. All right, moving into the next 4 o'clock game, we get the Cowboys go in and play the Panthers. We talked about Christian McCaffrey. What are your thoughts on Cam? Cam was insanely inefficient through the air, and yeah. it just scored so many touchdowns running and just does make up a lot of it with his legs. That still ended up as very high fantasy scoring quarterback. Even though he just simply can't complete a pass, it doesn't seem like. I just don't know. Yeah, Cam Newton overall, what was I sorting by? Yeah, FanDuel points last year, ranked 3rd overall. Russell Wilson, Todd Gurley, Cam Newton in terms of total FanDuel points last season. That means something. A lot of it came on the ground. Where do you put him in terms of cash? I love the fact that he runs, and I hate the fact that he can't complete passes.
Yeah, I think you're basically excited when you hear that he scored the 3rd most fantasy points, and he had so many just like unwatchable, terrible games, because that means that some weeks, and this is true, he was involved in winning people big tournaments. So that's basically what Cam Newton is. You'd probably be somewhat crazy to play him for your 50-50s and double-ups, and it's never going to be wrong to have some exposure to him for big tournaments either. So
you can stack him with McCaffrey as well.
Absolutely. That's a great stack.
Because of how much we typically don't do quarterback running back stacks. This is one where you can do quarterback running back. I think just because of how much they do work together.
McCaffrey will likely be his most targeted receiver this season. That makes it a great situation.
I was just trying to jump in there. He had 45 more running attempts than the next closest quarterback. He had 139 running attempts last season. Russell Wilson had 95. He had 160 more yards. He had 6 touchdowns, which all these are by far he was like a decent running back too, basically. So that makes up for so much of what he doesn't get done in the passing game, because he only threw 22 touchdowns. He did throw 16 interceptions. The 60% completion rate is closer to Jacoby Brissett than it is to a good quarterback. So you have, at this point, all these things are known. And I think that's the one reason I'm kind of bullish on Cam is that it's not reasonable to expect the passing will get worse. This is about as bad and efficient as you can be and still be a starting quarterback. So if you think there's actually any uptick in, I don't know, but I mean, I think there's a case for that. If you think there's even any uptick in the conversion rate on the passing, then you are looking at a lot of upside for a guy who, again, sure, scored just a ton of points. So again, this will be another quarterback that I do have exposure to. Mm-hmm. On the Dallas side, they get Zeke back and Dak back, and really not much else. Witten retires. Dez is often, you know, the NFL no man's land, just is not still not signed on any team. They brought in Alan Hearns in the offseason. Terrence Williams is still there, as is Michael Gallup is going to take over some of the third wide receiver three stuff. How much do you like? I kind of like Hearns in terms of like in the old who are they going to throw to category. Carolina is a good defense, but they did bring in Hearns specifically to fit that Dez role, which they force fed balls to last season. That was maybe probably a Dez thing, but how much can you get on board with anything here on Dallas?
Yeah, Hearns, again, we're only in tournament talk here, in my opinion, but Hearns definitely in that list of guys with big time upside. I'm actually going to throw, and you know, people forget too, I mean, maybe people don't forget anymore, but he was definitely one of those guys that just could have really explosive playmaking ability when he was on Jacksonville. And, you know, with Dez having just almost absurd levels of conversion issues last season, I think you could see Hearn step in and almost just be a sweet relief in that ability, because right, he has a big playmaking ability, but he can catch the short ball as well. I think people, based on just my, like what I've been watching, are kind of sleeping on Ezekiel Elliott, as crazy as it sounds. I mean, the man last season, and granted this is easier to do in a smaller sample size, but he averaged 98 yards per game on the ground, the second highest among guys that you've actually heard of that, you know, played something resembling a full season was 82. So in terms of just having a high floor rushing approach, Zeke is the first guy. I'm sorry, the next highest was 87. That was Gurley. But a full 11 yards. And the clustering after that, it goes Zeke at 98, Gurley at 87, Bell at 86, and it goes from there. There's a much tighter cluster in that second group. And yeah, I don't know. Zeke just seems like a huge upside play, dramatically underpriced relative to where he will be if he steps back into the role he had last year. And sure, yeah, good play. I mean, the thing holding him back from being a cash game consideration is that Carolina just was excellent against the run, allowing the third fewest rushing yards last year. So, you know, again, for cash games, not going to be there, but he could have 30 touches. No worries at all. So definitely keep an eye on him for this week as well.
There's a real situation in terms of game stack where this, you can just really blow it out of the box by stacking like Zeke, Cam, McCaffrey, and even Hearns, like if because he's coming so cheap. He would be last on my list in that group. But like, you know, think of a situation where Dallas jumps out to a lead because they are able to establish something on the ground early. We know that they're going to go there all day long. He'll be on the field for hurry up stuff too, like if they're coming from behind. And if that's the situation too, it also means that Cam is playing catch up as well. I think there's a lot of upside. And the other reason I really like Zeke, he's going to be so underowned compared to the other guys in his price tier. I think every single other running back in his price tier will have higher ownership than Zeke going into this week. Just because you have Kamara, clearly higher owned. Fournette will be higher owned.
DJ will be higher owned.
Gordon, DJ, every single one of these guys will have more ownership for a guy that, yeah, just will touch the ball a lot, almost no matter what. So yeah, I'm all on board. This is again another one on my list of GPP stacks. I really like it going into this week, and I think you made a pretty strong case. All right, let's get through Denver is hosting Seattle in the last 4:25 game. Denver has announced that Royce Freeman is going to be the starting running back, with Devontae Booker taking a backup role, though some people are speculating that will still be a running back by committee. Seattle is looking pretty damn bad, man. They still have Russell Wilson. They have Doug Baldwin, who said he's not going to play at more than 80% the rest of the season. That's a pretty damning thing for a guy to say going into a year that's just saying he's going to be playing hurt. And they have established Chris Carson as they're going to call him a running back one, and they've named him the starter. Oh man, I'm pausing because I feel like we've been down this road more times than I can reasonably emotionally handle with Seattle and their running back plans. Because like, just when it seems like the running back plan was the running back plan, and there was another guy, or it was Thomas Rawls, and then he sucks, and then it's Christian Michael, and he sucks, and then the one guy's good, but he gets hurt and doesn't play anymore. Like, I feel like we've been down the road so many times with Seattle. It kind of helps here for me that they're just big underdogs to Denver, who is still a very good defense. I'm very bearish on
this. It's a hard pass. Is there much else to say here? Like, you'd have to be insane.
They are a Russell Wilson. They are a Russell Wilson, like, tweaking his leg way from not winning a game this whole season. That's the only reason. Their defense is worse. Everything is worse. There's some teams that can withstand a quarterback, you know, kind of getting dinged up for a game or two.
they need to move on from him for any reason, they might be the worst team in football. I don't think another way to put it. Now Denver does get a quarterback upgrade, seemingly going into Case Keenum from what they were getting last year. Where do we stand here with Denver? I mean, how much do you trust the Royce Freeman thing? Do you think that the Keenum thing is enough to upgrade, like, the receivers, Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, or is this game kind of off your radar?
Yeah, I mean, certainly for your season-long purposes, you can, I think, pretty credibly give those guys an upgrade. If anyone wants to look you in the eye and give you some kind of trying to give you a relatively accurate picture of what these guys are going to do this week, I ask them to get their head checked. Like, we've seen so much variability around, first of all, which Denver receivers get thrown the ball, how they perform in any given week. We saw some promising stuff from Case Keenum last year, but are we so convinced that this guy can step into a brand new scheme after having been in the same scheme for a while and just perform automatically? Like, I am not convinced. I mean, definitely not for cash games. Wouldn't even touch it for big tournaments. Probably worth a gamble given the pricing situation here and the fact that we've seen, like, truly electric upside from Thomas. But it seems like you'd have to have a lot go right in your favor in order to feel good about that when Sunday was all said and done.
Yep, I think we'll know a little bit more. I'm not interested in touching this game, really. I don't think it'll have any great ownership. I don't think it has a ton of upside. I do think you can consider the Broncos defense. This is how bad I think that the Seattle offense is going to be. I think the Broncos defense is in a reasonable play. By the way, we meant to mention some of the team defenses I thought you could play this week. I kind of just glossed over that, I'm realizing, because we just did get stuck on some of the more of the plays. I'll run down just who I think some of those teams are. Obviously, the Ravens, they're very expensive. I do like the Broncos. I don't mind the Panthers here against Dallas. I think there's a situation where Dallas really struggles to get anything going. Like, if they can't establish Zeke, then the Panthers are looking like a very good defense. I don't mind the Browns coming very cheap as a GPP play against the Steelers, especially if they get some interceptions going their way. They're about the cheapest. If they can establish something, they can get, like, an interception and then run the ball a little bit, and then mostly just because they're coming at 3,000 on FanDuel. And I think that was basically the list. I think there's also a case to be made for the Vikings as well, if you think that the San Francisco is going to throw so much to even stay in the game. So, I don't know. We glossed over that. I had made note to mention some of those.
Totally forgot about that, just to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's okay. We're at an hour and a half now, and we haven't even gotten to the evening games. Let me just roll through quick. I'm just going to, if you don't mind, I'm going to do quick thoughts on these evening games, because I just don't want to spend a lot of time. Green Bay, I think I don't mind the Mitchell Trubisky upside at his price, and just because they're going to be playing catch-up. Obviously, Rodgers is in a situation where he and Davante Adams probably make for the very best stack on these later slates. The Detroit Jets game, I just don't care much. And the Rams are somehow only -4 favorites on the road against the Raiders. The Raiders could not win a game this year, and it wouldn't totally shock me. By the way, let me go. This would be the last thing, unless you had something else to add. I'm going to go through the prop bets that I put in before the season started. And I'm looking at my list right now. I have Leonard Fournette plus 900 to win the rushing title. Really like that one.
Yeah, really good.
Have T.Y. Hilton at plus 2400 to win the receiving title. Have Jimmy Garoppolo at plus 1450 to have the most passing yards. I like that one less now without McKinnon. So that was put in before the McKinnon news. And I have Oakland under 6.5 regular season wins at plus 140. I think that I was trying to find, that was the lowest I could find. I was willing to go lower at better odds and continue going all the way down the chain with the Raiders. That's how bad I think they're going to be. But 6.5 was the lowest I could get. So any final thoughts, buddy, for week 1? I think this definitely comes in as megapod status.
Oh, that absolutely, dude. The megapod was rich with this one. And, you know, I kind of like the Game by Game Breakdown podcast, so maybe we make it a tradition if people like it. If you do like it, let us know. You can email us, james@dfsr.com, doug@dfsr.com. Let us know that you like the Megapod, because if you do, if this format works for you, then it works for us. So until good luck, GL, in week 1, guys.
I won't fly to cut it off in an hour. dfsr.com/NFL. We'll get you started. Free 3-day trial includes premium chat. We will be there all morning on Sunday talking football, trying to make some last-minute adjustments as news comes in. dfsr.com/NFL. Get you started. We didn't quite reach an hour and a half. If I talk for another minute 40, we will. I will not do it. Buddy, let's talk to you right when we get off the pod. Talk to you next week when we're breaking down what week 1 looked like and going into week 2. Enjoy your football this weekend.
I'll miss you, pal. Bye.